help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. This is WGTD-FM. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Jess Sheeler, an outreach and career transition specialist at Job Corps, Steve Brown, assistant professor of education leadership at UW Oshkosh, and former Kenosha Unified School Superintendent Joe Manji. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
And a very pleasant good morning and welcome to this edition of Education Matters here on WGTD-HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, and of course the counties of Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties. I'm your host this morning for Education Matters, Steve Brown. And I'm very pleased to have in our studios once again Dr. Sue Savaglio-Jarvis, Superintendent of Kenosha Unified School District. And Dr. Sue, welcome as always.
Good morning and welcome. It's just always exciting to be back and talking with you, Steve, today.
Well, I always appreciate it. And just for purposes of letting our audience know, we are taping this on the 23rd of August. So this will air on the 1st of September, so just a few days before the actual school year begins, which is just the day after Labor Day.
And I would actually say today is the first day for many of our new teachers. Just this morning, we had our welcome back.
Right.
We welcomed back 107 new teachers to
Unified.
I had the chance to meet them this morning. We actually had our marching band, our summer marching band, welcome back. Just a huge fanfare, drum roll. Very energy in the room and just young faces, I would say, as I'm starting to age now, but just very, very excited that fine group and welcome to our KUSD family. So that was pleasant to meet everybody this morning, 107.
So this number of 107, is that unusual for as far as the number of brand new teachers starting a school year?
That's been steady over my last 4 years, going on 5 years now. In Kenosha, over the course of time, we've maintained our enrollment, slight decline, but we're maintaining around a slight decline. So we see that attrition back and forth. Many times we have teachers or educators that leave due to other commitments, family reasons, other such things.
Sure.
So that's been about the number that mm-hmm. I've been superintendent that I've seen come and go in terms of our new staff orientation. So just glad that we can find everybody and making sure that they're a perfect fit for our students
sure.
and our community.
Sure. And we were talking before we started taping that you are beginning year five as superintendent, and you were a guest of mine on Education Matters right at the beginning of your tenure as superintendent, and before that you were principal
mm-hmm. yes.
Over at Bradford.
Yes.
And so give our audience a quick overview of how you have seen the last 4 years. If someone said, okay, you have 30 seconds, Sue, to tell our audience what the last 4 years have been like.
I would probably in less than 30 seconds, I think a blink of the eye. I feel like 4 years have flown. When I look back, I think they've just flown by very quickly. But I have to say overall, the best part of it is the students. I've been able to really get into the classrooms, and I tell teachers and staff, I go in just to see the students and student learning. That has been always my passion, and to see the work and to see the engagement now that's happening from our educators to our community. And watching then, of course, when we have the end results of our students graduating, we have, roughly 5,000-6,000 students that graduate every year.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the culminating from I go into the pre-K programs, 3-year-old programs, and then be able to see that. Not many people get to see that spread. And at the end, then watching that final graduation and helping students move on to college and career readiness, that in a nutshell is why we all work so hard for the benefit of our community.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've never been a superintendent. I was a high school principal and an associate principal, and I was an administrator at the district level. But when you made that transition from high school principal to superintendent, what were some of the biggest surprises for you from a professional standpoint, let's say during the first 3 months when you were a superintendent?
Great question. When I reflect on that, and I've said this in the past a little bit, I think for me, moving toward that role of a principal, this role, it's more, there's more of that political piece of that role. And so I think just as human nature, as a teacher by nature, we always care, compassion, we want to do what's really, really best. And then when you get outside that in this role, superintendent, there's a lot of political forces that potentially pull not only at you, but at your district in a lot of different ways. And so I think there's having that background or the ability to be really flexible, be a good listener, and then be able to process where everybody's coming from was that next level for me to really understand that difference. Because in the world of being a principal, really, you're right there with the students, the families, and the community. Mm-hmm. And I do believe, I think, district office, if you will, somehow kept some of those distractions away from you. At least I try to keep the distractions away from my leaders right now and the educators so that they can do their jobs. I really believe we want them to focus on the best needs and interests of our students. So that's my job now to help work the outside group so those distractions don't keep coming into mm-hmm. them and disturb them from what they should be doing.
Sure. Would you say it would be almost like the analogy of a orchestra director or the director of a stage play where you make everything happen up to the point of showtime, if you will, and then you let, in this case, the teachers do their job and all the other stuff is happening in the background?
Absolutely. That's very good. I never thought of it that way. I like that. I like that way. Yes, absolutely. I would say that would be a good analogy of that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
As you know, I'm also a school board member out in the Salem School District. What kinds of experiences, just in general, as far as that transition from being a principal to a superintendent? Mm-hmm. And, of course, you were an administrator out in Arizona, out in Tempe, and we were talking before we started taping that I spent a number of years out in Arizona as a school administrator as well. Can an administrator be truly trained to work effectively and know how to work effectively with a school board? And then the follow-up question, when you moved from being principal at Bradford and then became superintendent, what kinds of things did you do to make sure that you would work well with the school board?
I think one of the things that makes potentially in this role as superintendent be successful is that somewhere I do go back to my background. I from a family of seven, I was the middle person. So I think if you read sometimes dynamics of families and the middle person, you become somewhat of that peacekeeper or the peacemaker between the balance. So when I look at this role a little bit, you have, in this case, Kenosha Unified, seven board members. I know some of my colleagues have nine board members and some have five. And so you have to really learn to be that you have to be there and be present and engaged for all of them. And you have to really learn to understand the different perspectives, the different just the different nuances of who they are, maybe their wants and needs, and then how to really be responsive to that. And in my past, I think that family dynamics that I have had, a large family, mm-hmm. it causes you to balance through that because you have a lot of complex family situations too. And then as I also my background in Arizona was a physical education teacher. And so I just had a knack really for being able to engage in with different challenges, personalities, teachers, because, you know, when you're teaching gym class, teacher A is bringing a group of students to you, then they're leaving you, teacher B is coming. So it's constant ebb and flow of interactions with adults and staff members. And then even within the community, I ran a lot of community nights, community activity programs for students. So I was able to engage with different facets other than just the students and the families, then community. So I think a well-rounded person, if you have some of those skills, it makes it easier. I do think if I didn't have some of that, figuring out how to do that, you definitely have to have some mentorship. I do have mentors as well, some of my colleagues, to do that. And so your second question was related to?
As far as moving from being principal at Bradford and becoming superintendent and working as superintendent with the board, as far as, you know, developing those relationships.
Right. You have to, and again, really realizing that we work as a collaborative team. But at the end of the day, when as you know, as a board member, I mean, they are my bosses, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so I have to respect that process. And I have to respect the process of the understanding how a board works. Their job is to govern and make sure that I'm enforcing district policies, and then to allow me to manage the school district, which they hired me for in the best interests of our students and our staff and the quality of learning. So that was the transition piece, to really observe that and understand their role as a governance. And my personality is to really build that collaborative teamwork approach. I want to do really well, and I want the district to do really well. I want our families to do well, our students to do well. So I think Kenosha Unified School Boards, over the past several years that I've been involved with the different groups, we all want that. So I think when you have that same vision and mission and collaborative spirit of working together, it does make it easier. But you have to learn that. You have to learn that, because there's different nuances amongst the different board members, mm-hmm. As well as the community. And sure. I think you have to learn how to balance all that. So you just dig in and listen. And I don't know, I just have that little piece of me that I love mm-hmm. that part. I love that part, to figure out, like, how can I do that well, and how can I understand the better needs of what maybe a board member may want, or anybody from the community, or a teacher may want, or family may want, or a parent may want. So where is it that I can serve to my capacity to make it better?
Yeah, and just in case some of our listeners are not aware, when you came here from Arizona after getting your graduate degree at Arizona State and your years of being a teacher and an administrator in Arizona, your roots are right here in Kenosha.
Yes.
How has that played into all this? Because people know you, they know your family, so it's not something that was totally new to you. How has that folded into everything that you do?
That's been a huge blessing, as I say, and a positive, because you're absolutely right. You know, I lived here, and shortly after going to Tremper, I went to La Crosse University for a couple years, and then I had left. But they still consider me a hometown girl, mm-hmm. and that truly has helpful, because when I'm out in the community and truly, again, my family, my dad's a dentist in the community, still working at 84 years old, God bless him, and my mom. And so the community has rallied around me in that support, just by the nature of that family connection and how we are engaged in the community. So I think overall, when you hear the name Savaglio Jarvis, there's always, oh, I know her brother, I know her sister. Matter of fact, sometimes my sister teaches at Bowles Elementary School, and they confuse us. So I think there's that whole relationship piece of, she knows the community. Matter of fact, just today I was at a Kiwanis meeting. We're part of our Kiwanis Rotary groups. We collaborate together. And, you know, having history myself in Kenosha, and then hearing some of the history of the gentlemen and the women in the group, it brings everybody together, and you can celebrate those moments because you're part of the history and you're part of the culture of Kenosha. So when they talk about certain situations or places, it's easy for me to relate to them.
Sure.
And then if I can relate to those situations, I build that relationship, and I can relate to the individual speaking, which is huge history in Kenosha. That's one of the things that I think if you're from the outside, that'd be really hard to understand, mm-hmm. that rich history.
Before we talk about what this next school year and some of the goals for the 2018-19 school year are, give us a quick overview of how this past school year went in terms of enrollments, funding, student testing. I mean, anything. Again, that you think our listening audience, because our audience is all over the greater Kenosha, Racine, Walworth County areas, mm-hmm. I think would have an interest in knowing.
I think our school district and our school year went really, really well. One of the things that I am very, very proud of Kenosha Unified, and I am competitive by nature. My background as a gym teacher and competition athletics. But in general, we work really, really hard to ensure that our students are receiving the best education possible. We typically compare ourselves with the five urban school districts: Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, Racine, and of course Kenosha. And when we take a look, that Kenosha Unified still maintains the top position in terms of academics that we serve. When we look at our assessment data, we still retain that top position in terms of our graduation rate. So numerous things to celebrate, but of course, as I always say, there's many, many more things we can do to get better mm-hmm. in comparison to other school districts across the country that we know. For example, our reading and our literacy and our African American and students of poverty, there's still work that we definitely a lot of work we can do in those areas as well. But overall, I think this year, again, my job has been to not bring new initiatives into Kenosha Unified. Our biggest one, which I think we'll talk about, is the ALICE piece, that safety training, because when I came into the district, one of the three things that I focused on that was my message to interviewing for the position were student achievement, always, always passionate about student achievement, and not in any order, but really exceptional customer service, and what does that mean to put ourselves out in front, no matter who we're dealing with. And then third is safety, because we need to provide that safe learning environment for our students and our staff and our community. So I would say overall, even those three things, that's been our focus. Many times in education, as you know, things just keep coming in. Things just keep coming in. And I take a look at those things and try to evaluate them in terms of, is this really going to impact, and I use that word impact, student learning, or is it just another program or some other opportunity? So we've tried to let the schools develop, because I really believe it's within the schools, the principals and leadership in those schools to do their work. They know what to do. They're closest to the students. The classroom teacher makes that impact. My job is to make sure they have the resources and tools, and yet try to keep some of those distractions away, mm-hmm. and yet support them, celebrate them, appreciate them, so that they feel valued. And I think overall I would summarize that piece. The other piece with state funding, we may talk about a little bit as well. Everybody across the state knows that's been a challenge. There's no secret there from school boards, as you know, as you look mm-hmm. at your budgets and try to balance your budgets. Kenosha Unified, through Mr. Hamden, our chief financial officer, has been a fabulous, fabulous key asset to us to keep us balanced, if you will. And constantly we have to make sometimes hard decisions in terms of looking at the future. You know, with the enrollment that's either slightly declining, you'd have to take a look at that, because expenses go up. But your money coming in goes down due to the decrease in enrollment. So you have to kind of juggle, okay, what is on that vision, and what do we have to watch out for? Or many school districts have done referendums for operating costs. They've done reductions in staffing. They've done other things. We've been very fortunate, like I said, to be really conservative and watch our monies so that we're not there yet. We're constantly thinking ahead, so we don't need to get there.
mm-hmm. And we'll talk about school safety and ALICE training and what ALICE is all about in a few minutes. But I was sort of curious, you know, as a school board member, I have a lot of people in the community who will always ask me questions about student test scores, achievement scores. You know, where is our district? How are the students in our district doing? And just like KUSD, we have outstanding teachers in the Salem School District. And when you look at the role of teachers in the classroom on a day-to-day basis, and everyone likes to look at achievement test scores, state legislators, people who go to vote on a referendum, they want to know about test scores. But other than achievement test scores, what other kinds of watermarks, if you will, should we be looking at as members of the public or school board members or educators or just any of us who pay taxes? What kinds of other things should we be looking at in addition to just test scores when we're trying to evaluate and assess how students are doing on a day-to-day basis?
That's a great question. Right now, not only the state of Illinois has been a big movement toward this, but right now Wisconsin as well. There's numerous school districts. I'm included in one of them right now. We're looking at something called redefining readiness. So there's a group of superintendents and other district personnel across Wisconsin here that are doing exactly that. They're saying, you know what, this one assessment, this one test is not the answer to how well the student will or will not do. You know, example. So this redefining readiness movement is starting to take a look at what else makes up the whole child. And it includes things even as some the college and career readiness piece. It includes some of those pieces. So are we preparing students to go out into the world, either college or career readiness? And what does that look like? So that looks like, are we giving students those opportunities to move out into those professions while they're in high school? Youth options, course options. So in the end, what I see this college, this career readiness initiative is taking a look at one aspect of assessment, because we are accountable toward that, you know, state, federal, for funding. Then the other piece is taking a look at that whole child, and we're in the process of doing exactly what you're saying, Steve, is identifying other key indicators that will say this child is career and ready for a college or career, and or just the whole bean. So there's different indicators we have started to look at in terms of what that looks like. I don't have them listed right now, but we are working on that and listening to other colleagues throughout the state. They're trying to identify some of that.
Sure. On the Kenosha Unified School District website, it talks about the initiatives for this coming school year. And one of them is building student confidence, and you sort of alluded to that. And the first paragraph, the first sentence says that the district wants to give students the confidence to take on more challenging coursework in high school, such as advanced placement and honors courses. And then it talks about other areas of focus that would not necessarily be, you know, and strictly in the academic area. How do we find a balance as educators and just as members of the community between the academics, if you will, and just being able to survive once a student graduates from high school? How do we find that balance in our public schools as far as this emphasis on academics and then in the non-academic area?
I think what we have to do and what we've been exploring is providing more of those opportunities that you talked about, providing more of those opportunities within the time that we have them in high school in particular. And not only high school, actually, but right now some of our elementary and middle schools are also taking students out of the classroom and going to different faucets within our community. I know some of our students have gone to the hospital care system to take a look at different type of workplace opportunities for them. So the early on, you can give students more of those outside experiences. You're broadening their opportunities for them to see why that learning that happens in the classroom, to connect it outside the classroom. And then that academic rigor, for example, earlier, and you had a question about that. We've actually, to give kids more opportunities too, we've created some boot camps, if you will, especially for our students of color. We did some AP advanced placement boot camps this summer, and we're continuing them on right now in the fall, helping them and engaging them to understand that they as well. So we want to increase that rigor for all of our students, but in particular because you had mentioned the statistical data of across Wisconsin or African-American children reading and those sorts of things. We want to push that and increase that for them. So I think, again, it just goes back to the creative minds of the educators that we have, from school board members to district leaders to the staff members to the educators in the buildings. How do we continue to, which is, you know, again, more and more, but how do we continue to bring more of that discipline and open up those opportunities for students? The career in tech ed has really been booming right now with the manufacturing companies being brought into Kenosha in general, Kenosha County in general. So we need to reach out to them and say, okay, how can our students early on be identified to have an opportunity to just come watch, come work, you know, those connections.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, as you know, Gateway Technical College and WGTD is a service of Gateway Technical College. Has a major involvement with Foxconn. How is KUSD working with the whole Foxconn world, which is, you know, already starting here in the area?
Very, very exciting. We've been already working through Brian Albrecht with Gateway. We are offering this coming school year the 4.0 industry tech courses. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a mouthful. So if you ask me what they're teaching in there, like mechatronics, that is a little bit beyond me, to be honest with you, Steve, but I'm very excited as myself to learn. And as we say in education, we're never too old to learn. But we've connected early on. We have Cheryl Colthy, who is our coordinator of career and tech education. We've went to the school board. They approved the course for the 4.0 industry. Matter of fact, we're looking at now getting the equipment for it through a grant. We received a grant in the amount of like $53,000 to support the technology machinery equipment that you need to have. And so we're going to be running those courses within our school system to give our students, again, that opportunity. And I think that door, well, I know that door then is going to open connected with Gateway and with Foxconn, because that's the pathway that we're leading into that. And that's going to grow once we become more updated, too, in terms of what their next steps.
Sure.
So starting to build that capacity of student capacity so we can be able to provide the workforce for them.
Sure.
Yep.
As you look at some of the other initiatives that you're focusing in on for this next school year, what are some other ones that you believe are really, really important?
I was going to share we just talked about the grant, the manufacturing 4.0, but I do think this other piece right now you hear in our community and all over the country is the mental health issue of our children and the trauma. We talk about it in terms of trauma. Many of our students are coming with some type of trauma based within their family dynamics or their situations. So not only through the safety grant, but just in general, the last several years, Kenosha Unified has done like trauma training. We have three levels of training that we provide our schools to do and make sure everybody has that sense of what it means to really get to know a child before we start making accusations or accusing children of doing things and understand a child better and how to build learning supports around that child so that they're able to learn. That's the other big initiative we're working on right now through the state. Like I had shared, the state fund grants, there's a big component about trauma training, mental health training. So that's being all set up through our coordinator of special ed and student support. Bridget Katark has that on her plate right now. Mm-hmm. So we're going through a lot of staff training the next couple years. And with that, again, those impacts hopefully will then help a child be more successful in school. As challenging as some of their lives can be, as you know.
Mm-hmm. As a superintendent, how do you know when to take something off of that hypothetical plate that we always talk about? You know, there's all this stuff on the plate, and then we're adding stuff. And, you know, we have always, over the many decades that you and I have been involved in public education, all these mandates that we're required to do from either the federal government or the state and things that we want to do. How do you know as superintendent when certain things need to be sort of moved off to the side, not ignored, but just moved off to the side a little so we can bring some new stuff in, but yet not ignore the things we have already been doing?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. Like I said before, what I focus on is I'll take a look at something or someone might bring something to the table and I say, all right, have you evaluated it? There's five or six different questions I may ask about what they're bringing forward to the table. And I may ask, what is the impact to student learning? Because that's the very first question you're going to get. I need to understand that there's an impact. And then what is that impact? Can you show me that impact? Who is the impact for? Is it for all students? Is it for a specific population of students? Is it for? And then I also think about, well, what is the impact that it would have on the staff? Is it impact that's good impact? I mean, is a staff member going to embrace and say, you know what, I want to be involved with this initiative, if you will? Or is it going to be like, And I have always shared this, Steve. I've always shared with staff that I will never forget that I was a teacher first. And I have said that from day one. And to this day, I say that every year I start the year, I will never forget that I was a teacher first. And I think having that mindset of the impact and understanding, I'm able to say, not right now, not right now. For us, that may not be something that we're going to look into. And I'm also really more about allowing the school leadership teams within their school, like I said a little bit earlier, to develop what it is that they need to do for student success, student achievement, because they're closest to it. And again, I want to be that resource for them. Now, there's a couple things, like I said, about school safety. Mm-hmm. So when that came about, when I was starting to come into the position, the Alice training, that is an initiative that I would say the district. Now, people say like, well, the district did this to you. Yeah, the district did do this. We brought this in because I truly believe the old way we were doing the lockdown methods, I was totally convinced when I went to training, that's not good. That's not good for students or staff. The impact is horrible if something really were to happen. So we had to change. So the initiative became district initiative. Probably the other initiative that we're looking at is literacy, which is really the reading component. Our children need to know how to read, and that falls in line with numeracy and literacy. And we look at different interventions for reading supports. But I really try to stay away from I struggle a little bit because I'm not a leader that comes in and say, okay, everybody must do this. Mm-hmm. Everybody must do that. I want it to be more of a team collaborative piece. The other thing, probably the only other one we brought in recently, was we're piloting something for bullying prevention. It's called Stop It, and it is a way for anonymous students to call in, parents to call in, because I think that's important. That goes in line with school safety. So I think I do. I get bombarded by a lot of stuff that comes in, and I can do this for your district, and we can do that for your district. When I evaluate it, and not only me, but I have a team, I have a leadership team that does it. We take a look at that those critical questions and say, we talk about that impact. And if it doesn't have high impact and low resolution, it's easy to say thank you, but we're going to continue on what we've been doing because we've been successful what we've been doing.
Mm-hmm. In the area of safety, we've talked a bit about ALICE. And for our audience, and I'm sure many of our listeners have heard discussion about ALICE, alert, lockdown, information, counter, and evacuation. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you could just talk briefly, not as much about the actual training itself, but how the district has implemented it, how it's been going, and what your perspectives are about it.
The implementation team started several years ago. What we first needed to do was make sure that all of our administrative team, our team was all trained. So that took us basically a summer to do that. The next phase of the implementation process was to really train all the staff. So from our initial training, we had then trained the trainer model, mm-hmm. if you will, and we had teams of leaders then that went out to all the schools. And within 1 year, we were able to train all staffs at the 41 schools. Quite the feat, but I can tell you that I try to participate in each one or at least make a present each one. I mean, you could hear a pin drop when you talk about you go to staff development, professional learning trainings, and people are, you know, maybe not paying attention as much as they should. But this training, I mean, it was intense. Once we did that, we started then going to the next phase of, okay, what about student training, if you will? What does that look like? Through the ALICE initiative, there was some information regarding lesson plans. So Kenosha Unified, a team, modeled some of those plans, but we did our own lesson plans. Matter of fact, many of my surrounding districts have asked us to borrow the lesson plans, and we've freely given our lesson plans to their districts. So this past year, we were working on the student piece in terms of each grade level has a lesson plan, if you will, explaining ALICE and then doing some, you know, what does it mean to do at a certain level? Because obviously with kindergartens, you're not high school kids, the complete difference of what they can do. Mm-hmm. The next phase, if you will, was really having the parent nights. So last semester, we ran some parent nights, and those were very, very successful in terms of helping the parents understand, you're correct, like what it means, but then also giving them more in-depth of how they can help and be supportive, talking to the children. And this year, our phase of implementation has been continuing more drills. We have found out that our staff and students want more drills, so we're going to do four drills throughout the school year. And now we're training our substitutes, and we've also had requests from outside community groups to at least have an overview of ALICE. So we've had some team members go out and do some presentations to some outside groups to at least talk about it as well. So if that's the implementation piece, if you will. I think now the only piece that we're in the mix of talking about is what we call reunification sites, or if something were to happen, that evacuation, mm-hmm. which is the E. From all the different perspective levels, evacuating, where's our identified evacuation site, and then what does that reunification look like where the parents then can come and pick up their children and sure. make those connections. So that's that next phase of how do you work through that, because there's different philosophical thoughts, like you shouldn't tell people where certain places are. Mm-hmm. So we work closely with Kenosha Police Department, Pleasant Prairie, the sheriff. So we've got the three law enforcement agencies at our round table when we do talk, and we'll work through it and we'll come up with a plan. But that would be the last piece of it, and then continuous practice mm-hmm. to get better.
When schools have had the drills and they've taken place, I've been at some schools when they've actually occurred, and I've gone through some modified training myself with ALICE. From your perspective, how realistic are these drills? And I mean, in terms of how they're done, because, you know, there was always the criticism before ALICE, if there was a fire drill or something, that, you know, okay, here we are, another fire drill, and some people didn't do it, and if they did, you know, they didn't believe it was really happening. But how realistic are these drills?
I mean,
without getting into real detail.
Yeah, no, I think because of the nature of the world today, that's a great question. I think because of the nature of the world today, our students are much more sensitive to, unfortunately, this violence that they're seeing. Mm-hmm. So as you know, with their iPhones and their all the different technology that they have, immediately when a horrible situation happens, horrific of a school shooting or things like that. So I think that impact today on the students at the middle school and high school level, their drills are definitely much more now, I use the word serious, but I know the staff takes them serious because we all know. I mean, what can really, really happen? At the elementary level, it's not we don't want to put fear in the children. So I think it's more of a level, we're going to keep you safe. So they're not, I mean, they do them, but they're not as intense. But I do think the middle level high school, those drills are more of like, this can happen. And we need to be ready and prepared for it versus probably when you and I went to school, okay, here goes the fire alarm. We know what, we just need to walk out and evacuate. I think there's more of that fear in students today from what I hear and see the students talk about a little bit. Because they're living in a different world. Mm-hmm. They're living in a reality world of it could be our school. And unfortunately, as we superintendents, and I hate to talk about it, but the threats that we get, they live those threats. You know, they're scared just as much as we all are scared when we have to make those difficult decisions at night to close a school or, okay, the school's safe. It's difficult. And I think through those threats and other things, I think the students realize they are trying to keep us more safe. And we need their help just as much as they need us to help them.
Mm-hmm. We're taping this on the 23rd of August. And U.S. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos is talking about the possibility, and it's only in the talking stages now. There have been no firm decisions made by the U.S. Department of Education, but the headline in the New York Times from yesterday, actually it's from today on the 23rd, Education Secretary considers using federal funds to arm schools. The Education Department is considering whether to allow states to use federal funding to purchase guns for educators. According to a number of people who have knowledge of the plan, I saw some news reports today. They're looking at somewhere in the vicinity of $50 million that might be allocated, and I think this is under some Title IV monies for training and for actually arming teachers with weapons. What's your perspective on that? Now, I served in the military. I was in ROTC. We talked about this before. I know how to fire a weapon. I feel comfortable if I go to the gun range in Bristol, whatever. But I'm not trained to be a SWAT officer, and I'm just giving you my
thank you. Yeah.
My personal reflection on that.
You, yes.
But this idea of arming teachers with monies through the federal government, what's your point of view on that?
My point of view is I go back to a little bit what you were saying, Steve. I mean, I was a trained educator. I'm not a trained shooter. Yeah. And I don't believe that we should be doing that. What I believe we should be doing is having the federal money, if we're going to supply support money to the schools, increase our SROs, as we call them, our security resource officers. There is no doubt a trained individual, and I mean trained, whether it be a SWAT gentleman or Kenosha Police Department chief, fire, those trained individuals know their jobs. That's what they're trained for. So I would argue that if we are going to do that, because I do know right now that's what our educators want, that's what our administrators want. I've heard that within our own community when we took a pulse of, okay, what do we need to do to ensure school safety next? I mean, they are requesting an increase in the amount of security resource officers that are trained to carry weapons. They're experts in it. I don't know all of the educators, but I would like to imagine that many of them are trained to do what they do best, and that's to teach our students in the classroom. And having some kind of firearm or handgun in their hand would be really emotional, first of all, to have to probably use that, and we're not trained for that. So that's me personally.
Sure.
I prefer the trained personnel coming into a building and or in my building with that background.
Yeah, and obviously the decision that would be made to have such a policy in a district to accept the monies would, I would assume, in most cases, would go to a school board. And there might be some boards that would say yes. I know that I, as one member of a five-person board in my district, I would say no. I mean, I believe in the, as you said, the school resource officer approach.
Absolutely.
One of the other things I wanted to ask you about, as we all know, because it made national news last year and even before that, past January, the school district, KUSD, there was a settlement with Ash Whitaker, who's now a sophomore at UW-Madison. a transgender student. The school district settled the discrimination case. Not talking about the case itself, but what kinds of policies are in place now in KUSD in terms of gender-neutral bathrooms, transgender bathrooms, et cetera, in KUSD?
Right now, our policy supports accommodations for all students. So it's a very inclusive policy in terms of just all students. So what that may mean be is if a parent or family or someone comes forward with identified need, whatever it may be, we in the policy it really states that you work with the building administration first to see what type of accommodations can be made for the child or the student. And if for some reason there's an area where there's just some disagreement, we do have that next level we call school leadership. And under school leadership and our student support groups, they get together to provide different accommodations potentially for that child. I think over the course of time, I mean, like pronoun names, things like that, those are things that are being changed and put on, you know, someone must be called a different nickname and things like that. That's mm-hmm. been all okay. As far as those accommodations for restrooms, I mean, in general, we've been using that policy right now. In terms of they come forward, they have a conversation. It's been working out. From the best of my knowledge right now, it's been working out within the schools, with the administration and the families. And really, again, that's the best way you could do it, through that communication as a collective group without – and it works. So until we maybe have an identified case that may not, then our school board would have to take consideration and work through potentially different policy. But right now our policy supports working the best we can with accommodations for that child.
Mm-hmm. As we get towards the end of the interview, if you could look into the Dr. Sue crystal ball, you're starting year number 5 now. If you could look into that crystal ball over the next 5 years, what are 2 or 3 or 1 or 2, I don't care how many number there might be, of things that you would really like to pursue within the district that you think would be really, really neat?
That's a great question. That's, you know, and like I said, because sometimes when I view my job, this is what's hard about that question for me a little bit. I don't view it as me. Mm-hmm. I view it as a district. And so as we move forward this next coming school year, I think this is going to be interesting because I'm working on a comprehensive needs assessment. We're doing a little bit broader needs assessment within all of our schools. We're going to redesign our survey that we send out to our parents, and it's going to be more of a community service based on what I call it'll help identify priorities. So what I like to see is exactly what you're saying, that when at the end of the day, when we issue out that community survey of some form, it'll start to identify priorities for our community to say, this is what we want our community of students, our children. This is what we'd like for our community as an education community. That's what I'm really, really most excited about, to be honest with you. And I think from there, that's my, like what I call the marching orders. I think from there, we start to generate, okay, here's what our community really believes in. And truthfully, a lot of it is that student achievement. I really want students to be successful and have those opportunities, all students, and be inclusive of all students. And where can we find those places for them either to go on into college or some career opportunities within our own community or beyond? But I think that assessment's going to give me that priority list of saying, this is what our community wants to set our priorities on. That's what I'm really looking forward to.
Mm-hmm. I know that with all the discussions that you and I have had over the years, that your focus and your true desire of involving the full community always comes
Thank
forward.
You.
So
thank you.
Anyway,
but I was going to add one more.
Okay.
Money. Yes.
Oh.
I was.
No,
if I had that crystal ball, I think I should just put that in there. If I had that crystal ball, I think it would be like just we could have the money. Mm-hmm. Not that the money's the answer to everything, but I do know that it would help and support some of the concerns that we have in terms of even when we hear from our staff in terms of them going out and buying extra things for students. As you know, there are extra supplies and things like that and cost of living wages and increases. If we could just have more money, I don't know how to say it any other way, I think that would just help us continue on the path that we're on. It's been tough. We've never recuperated from basically, you know, 2010-11 when Act 10 came in. We've just never recuperated. And we've been managing, like I said before, which is fantastic.
Sure.
But if I had that crystal ball and we could just have a little more.
Okay.
That would be helpful.
Okay. I want to thank Dr. Sue Savaglio-Jarvis, who's superintendent. of Kenosha Unified School District, who is starting year number five as superintendent, as my guest this morning here on Education Matters. And I know I've said this before, but thank you so much for everything that you do and for all the great things happening in KUSD.
Thank you. And I'm just so thankful I'm able to share our story, too. So thank you, Steve, for having me this morning. And I appreciate it. And thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. For Education Matters here on WGTD HD, I'm Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine.